Good afternoon. Welcome to Wellness Watch. You're listening to Wellness Watch at WGXC 90.7 FM from Acre, Hudson, and Catskill. Wellness Watch is part of our health and wellness programming. We bring you up-to-date information about the health of Greene and Columbia counties. We want to provide you with some reliable resources designed to help you live a healthier life. And it's interesting that according to results of a health survey by Siena College in October of 2010, only 2% of residents of both counties turned to the radio to get information about health care. So we here at WGXC plan to turn that around. Join us in supporting our volunteer hands-on radio station so we can continue to bring you valuable information and access to resources through our health and wellness programming. Our pledge drive begins October 24th through the 30th, so be sure you are tuned in and ready to pledge. But of course, we want you to be tuned in before then as well. So today is Wellness Watch. I'm calling it our Back to School edition. Our children are going back to school. They're going to be exposed to various infectious diseases, and of course, that exposure increases from the summertime as they move into those school hallways. And we begin to think about immunizations and prevention against the common cold, the flu, and actually some skin infections. I don't know how many people are familiar with a term called MRSA, the methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. But there's another topic around an infectious disease that you may have heard about in the news just recently, and it's about the HPV vaccine. That's the human papillomavirus. Now, I do want our listeners to know that there may be some explicit conversation around sexually transmitted diseases. So if you are sensitive to that, you may not want to continue listening today. However, it's a very serious infection. Leads to many different conditions and diseases, and one of them being cervical cancer. So today I have a guest. I have Nancy Rosenzweig, and she's just moved to our community, and I want to welcome Nancy.
Thank you, Linda.
And Nancy also is a certified midwife and will be working in out of Dutchess County. Is that correct?
Yes.
Great. Wonderful. So we're going to talk a little bit about the infection, but I do want Nancy to introduce herself and give us a little bit of background, how she got to become a midwife, possibly. Always nice to get to know our new community members. Welcome, Nancy.
Thanks, Linda. For most of my life, I was a professional dancer, started ballet classes at the age of 5, and danced my way through school and college and graduate school, eventually ending up in New York City as a professional modern dancer. I taught, I toured, I traveled the world in modern dance companies, and along the way became very interested in many of the alternative health availability in terms of acupuncture and massage and shiatsu and Feldenkrais and Rolfing and craniosacral therapy and everything under the sun, mostly because at that time we as dancers didn't really feel that the medical profession addressed our pain, our complications, and we needed to find other things to do. How I became a midwife mostly is due to the fact that I went to a gynecologist for regular pap smears every single year, like I was supposed to. And when I got pregnant for the first time, I went to this doctor assuming I would continue with him and give birth at a hospital in Manhattan. Well, he looked at me and he said, without thinking, you dancers, you all end up with C-sections. And I was so shocked by what he said to me that I immediately started looking around. There's got to be another way to have a baby. I don't want a C-section. And I had never even heard of midwives at the time. So someone told me about an out-of-hospital birthing center called the Maternity Center. And I went there and it changed my life completely. I had no idea that there were midwives, that there were advanced practice nurses, that there were people who would spend an hour with you for an appointment, teaching, talking, listening, going over everything in your life that contributed to your health as a pregnant woman. And after giving birth gloriously to my two children, who are now 23 years old and 21 years old, I decided that my passion for childbirth wasn't just about being a pregnant woman. I really wanted to change my life. And when my daughter was 2 years old, I went back to school at Columbia University and became a certified nurse midwife. It took about 5 years of part-time education, and I got my degree in 1997.
Fantastic. What a story. I think that we have sort of a side story in today's program about being able to follow your dream, engage in your passion, even though you've been, and I don't want to say stuck, because I think dancing must have been very exciting, but you've been in one place for so long, and you can move, and you can move out into wonderful things, and you obviously have moved out and doing great things for many people. One thing that I do want to add that Nancy and I agreed on prior to the program was we want to use the word providers. Most people are always looking to the physician, the MD, to be the last source of truth for them. But today, nursing is expanding. There are different providers. There are alternative providers, midwives being one of them. So we're going to use the word providers, meaning that you have a lot of options out there to seek care, to seek information from. So I think we'll move on here. I'm going to read from a fact sheet from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And speaking of source of truth, that's probably a good place to go for information, general information about many different infectious diseases. So the HPV virus, approximately 20 million Americans are currently infected with HPV. Another 6 million become newly infected each year. HPV is so common that at least 50% of sexually active men and women get it at some point in their lives. From HPV, about 1% of sexually active adults in the U.S. have genital warts at any one time. And then each year, about 12,000 women get cervical cancer in the U.S. And Nancy and I agreed we do want to talk about cervical cancer rates and incidents in the U.S. and not worldwide. And so as you're listening to us, most of our discussion will be around U.S. cervical cancer rates. So what is genital HPV infection? It's genital human papilloma virus, and it's the most common sexually transmitted infection. Now, there are more than 40 HPV types that can infect the genital areas of males and females. These types can also infect the mouth and throat. And what's really important, and Nancy is going to spend a little bit more time around this aspect of HPV, is that most people who become infected don't even know they have it. Let's just move on to the next question. We have a little bit of information now about HPV, but how can people prevent it? And I know one of the ways is through a new vaccine, and there's some controversy around there. So, Nancy, tell us a little bit more about, you know, the prevention part for HPV.
Well, Linda, I think we'll get to the vaccine a little bit later, but one of the things I want to talk about is what is a pap smear, who should get it, and when should they get it, and how often should they get it. And I think a lot of people have heard the term going to get their pap. And I get so many women who say to me, isn't a pap given to me every single time I have a vaginal exam? And one of the things I do need to explain to everyone is that A Pap test is a screening test. When a woman or young woman goes to her healthcare provider to get tested, we're not doing a Pap every time she comes, so that if a speculum is put inside your vagina to look inside, it doesn't mean a Pap is being done. If the healthcare provider's fingers go inside the vagina to examine you, it doesn't mean a Pap is being done. A Pap smear is one test. It's scraping the cells of the cervix. It's a screening test. It's not diagnostic. That means that if we send this sample to a laboratory and they come back and say the cells are not normal, it doesn't mean somebody has cancer or something horrible is going on with their cervix. It just means we have to look at it more closely to see what's going on. So that, first of all, a Pap smear is only looking for abnormal cells in the cervix, which may eventually lead to cancer of the cervix, but cervical cancer is one of the slowest growing cancers out there. It takes many, many, many years of abnormal cells to lead to cervical cancer.
So what you're just telling me, then, what I'm hearing you say is that if women are religious about getting a yearly Pap test or Pap screening, but not just getting it, but asking the provider what were the results, keeping track of the results. We tend to trust our providers to keep track of our medical records and what's happening. And, you know, it's not 100%. I have some stories that I could tell. Very quickly, a woman, 7 years of mammography, and there had been something on there. It wasn't serious, but she had no idea it was there. So, indeed, you know, advocate for yourself, get the results, and keep track of them.
Great idea. I say that to all my clients. But in terms of the Pap smear, getting a yearly Pap smear is actually not the recommendation anymore.
Wow.
The new recommendations are, number one, that we're not even starting Pap smears on anyone who's younger than 21. And the reason is, and it has to do with HPV, that since HPV is so common, it can sometimes lead to abnormal cells. And young women who are often more sexually active with different partners have a very high chance of getting HPV and having some abnormal Paps. And these young women who had so little chance of getting cancer were being subjected to colposcopies and biopsies and procedures to actually take away part of their cervix at such a young age that current studies are showing that that can be more harmful than good to the young women.
Well, I'm a nurse, and I think I'm wondering now if that's happening, that you compromise the cervix, that you could compromise future pregnancies in terms
absolutely.
Of the cervix.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, because the cervix is what stays together to hold that pregnancy in. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So there was a potential danger in premature labor or even miscarriage by taking away bits of the cervix to examine them to see whether or not the young women had cancer.
Very
which in all likelihood they did not have.
Very interesting.
So the current recommendation is to start at 21 years old and from 21 to 30 to have yearly Paps and tests for HPV, which we'll get to in a minute.
Okay.
Once a woman's over 30, if she's had 3 normal Pap smears in a row, we can then go to every other year or even every 3 years, depending upon her specific situation. But not needing a Pap smear every year doesn't mean you don't need to go to your provider every year, because we do want the breast exam and the discussion and the education and the physical exam to take place on an annual basis.
And you said discussion, and I think the discussion is around what types of things have changed in your life that might predispose you to cancer or some other issue, issue around sexuality. So you do want to be talking to somebody you trust, because typically, it's just not cocktail language in each your conversation. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So your yearly exam and appointment is very, very important for both you and the provider.
Yeah, I like the fact that many providers, and I consider them to be a good provider, when they send me my postcard, because we can get very, very busy. So I would recommend that people ask their provider, say, do you have that service? Or will you call and remind me? Because that year can go by very quickly, and you can tend to get behind. Oh, well, it's 3 months behind, or it's 6 months behind. And now you're out 2 years and you've missed a whole visit.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a great idea. So Linda asked me about prevention. So pap smear is one way to prevent cervical cancer. It may not prevent the cells from becoming abnormal, but the fact is, if a woman has abnormal cells and she's watched very closely over time, we can prevent the progression to cervical cancer. And that is really our best way of prevention for cancer right now in the country.
Great, great. So early detection requires you going to your provider yearly, regardless of whether you're having a pap smear yearly.
Yes.
Great.
So the other thing that may be done at your yearly exam is testing for sexually transmitted infections. And people need to know that we have different tests for different infections. So I also get a lot of clients who say to me, well, I assume they tested me for everything, which in fact is rarely true. So the sexually transmitted infection testing we can do currently, we can do either urine or vaginal samples for chlamydia and gonorrhea. We can do blood tests to see if someone has ever been exposed to the herpes virus, which is type 1 or type 2. We can do a blood test to see if anyone's ever been exposed to syphilis or hepatitis B or hepatitis C. We now have a new sampling to test for Trichomonas, and that also tests for vaginal infections, which are yeast or bacteria based. So a lot of people kind of feel that if anything isn't okay in their vagina, they think they can diagnose themselves, when in fact, it's close to impossible to do that.
Right. And for the statistics around the incidence and prevalence of chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis in New York State, you can go to www.health.state.newyork.us, and you can see what the statistics are for not only New York State, but both Columbia and Greene County. Another point that I do want to make, I know we're focusing a lot here about women, but men also really need to visit their providers yearly and have testicular exams. And if there's any unusual lesions or discharge, definitely, you know, bring this to your provider's attention so you can get early treatment.
Linda, that's a great point. I work exclusively with women, but one of the things we're talking about today is the prevalence of sexually transmitted infections. And really, the truth is, the reason they're so prevalent is that for many of these infections, there are no symptoms. So it's a great idea for young men and older men to be tested for these infections on a regular basis as well. And when we talk about the vaccine, one of the vaccines we're going to speak about, named Gardasil, has also been approved for men.
Great. I think, again, we just have 30 minutes today, and we decided that we could probably spend several hours around this topic. So let's move on to the vaccine, because I know that this past week there was, I think it was on TV, one of the potential presidential candidates brought up the topic of the vaccinations. And because I don't have TV, I missed that. So I'm going to rely on Nancy to fill in the details around what happened this past week.
Well, I have to be honest and say I have not heard this directly, but I have read that Michelle Bachmann criticized Governor of Texas Rick Perry for issuing an executive order mandating the Texas schoolgirls get the Gardasil vaccine. And there's a lot of controversy about the vaccine, but also about the fact that the governor's former chief of staff, Mike Toomey, is now a lobbyist for Merck, which is the pharmaceutical company that makes the Gardasil vaccine. And there is a lot of controversy about campaign contributions, which I won't get into right now because I don't have the facts and because we're much more interested in the controversy about the vaccine.
Right.
But this is how it came into the news this week.
I think we can hand that topic off to one of our other afternoon programs for discussion around that political part of it. Well, I know that I read on the internet, again, I don't have TV, so I rely on the internet and radio, by the way, that you know, some conservative groups oppose targeting preteens, and there is a professor of family medicine at the University of Pittsburgh, and he says, and his name's Richard Zimmerman, he said, in my opinion, there's not a compelling ethical reason to mandate. The ethics is the opposite, to strongly recommend, but not to mandate. So do you want to move towards, you know, your personal opinions? I know you've been doing a lot of reading around this, and that based on your reading, you've come to some conclusions that you might want to share, but we will tell our listeners that I think these are probably Nancy's opinions.
These are Nancy's opinions. Nancy believes very strongly in the concept of true informed consent. And what is at the heart of all medical care, health care, wellness care, is the fact that every single intervention has risks and has benefits. And for each individual, one must balance the risks and the benefits to figure out for you personally, is the intervention worth the risk for the benefit we're going to receive?
And I think you told me there are some significant risks around this vaccine.
Not only are there significant risks to the vaccine, but in 90% of cases, a woman's healthy immune system clears the HPV virus in just 2 years. I'm going to go back to the HPV virus and just let's clarify a few things. There are more than 40 types of HPV. We don't know about all of these types, but we do know that types 16 and 18 cause about 75% of cervical cancer in the United States. Types 6 and 11 cause most of the genital warts in the United States. So Merck, the company who produced Gardasil, has made a vaccine that targets 16, 18, 6, and 11. They're recommending that it be given to women between the ages of 9 and 26 because that is their study population. And they are saying that they believe this vaccine will prevent getting these four types of HPV viruses for 5 years. There's another vaccine called Cervarix, and this is targeted only to five types of HPV that cause cervical cancer, 16, 18, 31, 33, and 45, and this is effective for 6.4 years. So here are the issues. There are some types of HPV that lead to warts. There are some types that lead to abnormal cells of the cervix, which could eventually lead to cervical cancer. We don't know anything about the long-term benefit-risk ratio. And what's coming out are enormous numbers of reports that there are side effects to the Gardasil vaccine. Most of them are not serious, and most of them occur on the day of the vaccine, but there are some adverse events and deaths that have been reported that are either caused by the vaccine or associated with the vaccine. Diane Harper, who's director of the Gynecological Cancer Prevention Research Group, which is at the University of Missouri, has been quoted as saying, "The rate of serious adverse events is now greater than the incidence rate of cervical cancer," which is a pretty terrifying statement to think that there are more risks to taking the vaccine than there is a risk of actually ever getting cervical cancer in your life.
So this is definitely some information that will help people challenge their providers who are being wooed by the pharmaceutical industry on the benefits. And many providers, this is very interesting. I think that we have high expectations around our providers to know everything, and they can't. There's so much changing in healthcare and in the scientific world. So this is where you, as an advocate, need to get this information and bring it to your provider and challenge them and make a decision around the information that you can get from reliable sources. I think we're sort of moving on towards the end of the program. So the vaccines, there's some controversy. There are some serious risks associated with it. So in going back to the prevention part, and I know that people think, well, it's the same old, but sometimes simple is better. So condoms, they can be effective, but they should be used with every sex act from start to finish, okay? And then Nancy and I were also talking about the faithful relationships with one partner. This is a crazy world, and I'm out there on sort of the end, moving towards the last 40 years of my life, because I expect to live to 100. But we have it's a different society out there, and there tends to be, I think, more acceptance around, frequent partners, maybe casual sex. But just having, I think Nancy told me, just having that one partner doesn't guarantee either that you won't get HPV. And that was why it was...
I think the fact is that with any one sexual encounter, it's possible to get HPV because your partner may have no symptoms at all. The fact is, you may be able to clear it from your system and it may not cause any harm, but we are always going to recommend condoms as a way of not getting sexually transmitted infections. Nothing is 100% perfect. Just wearing a condom doesn't mean it's not possible. People can get HPV in their throat as well from oral sex. There's nothing that's 100% guaranteed to prevent infection. But I think the issue that's most important is that young people, both men and women, need to know that men and women, whether you're in a heterosexual relationship, a homosexual relationship, it doesn't matter. People can have infections and not know it and can therefore pass it to any partner at any time. Obviously, the more partners you have, the more likelihood you are of getting an infection.
Okay. Thank you so much, Nancy. And I want to remind our listeners that you can send questions, you can send comments, and questions for Nancy when she begins her program in the fall. But it's info@wgxc.org. Again, that's info@wgxc.org. And thank you for listening today. It's been a pleasure, Nancy, and welcome to the WGXC family.
Thanks so much, Linda. I'm really excited to start my program, and I love being a guest on yours.
Thank you.